Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Logenplatz, der Filmpodcast mit Stefan Kuhlmann.
Herzlich willkommen, Freunde Römer Landsleute, zu einer weiteren Sonderausgabe. Tatsächlich, es ist ein wirklich sehr besonderes Spezial. Es ist erstmal besonders, weil ich jetzt hier alleine sitze und Herr Meier und Herr Max nicht da sind. Den habe ich Urlaub gegeben. Ich habe mal gesagt, ich kann das selber hier die Knöpfe drücken. Dafür brauche ich die anderen nicht. Ich könnte aber auch ehrlich sein und sagen, Max sitzt da hinten in der Ecke und passt auf, dass ich kein Mist baue, oder?
Ja, ist richtig.
Ja, ist richtig. Habe ich den richtigen Knopf gedrückt?
Ja, dir.
Okay, wunderbar. Es ist wirklich ein sehr besonderes Special und wir werden gar nicht so viele Worte verlieren. Es geht um den wichtigen, wunderbaren und beeindruckenden Film Firebird. Es ist die wahre Geschichte des sowjetischen Soldaten Sergei, der in den 70er Jahren mitten im Kalten Krieg sozusagen sich in einen Kameraden, einen Piloten namens Roman verliebt. Und wie wir uns vorstellen können, 70er Jahre Russland, Homosexualität, denkbar schlechte Voraussetzung.
Hast du ein Mädchen zu Hause?
Nein. Und du?
Ich könnte ihm was zeigen.
Ich habe Angst vor diesem Traum. Daraus aufzuwachen. Dich zu verlieren.
Nach diesem Bericht, der mir hier vorliegt, haben Sie sich demnach mit einem Gefreiten unsittlich verhalten. Geben Sie mir den Namen.
Hauptsache mit dir.
Sergei, ich bin Offizier. Ich kann mein Land nicht verlassen.
Eine sexuelle Beziehung eines Mannes mit einem Mann wird mit einer 5-jährigen Gefängnisstrafe im Arbeitslager belegt. Wenn nur ein Funken Wahrheit in dem Bericht steckt, dann kann sie niemand mehr schützen.
Ich sehe, was sich vor meiner Nase abspielt.
Ich wusste es!
Du weißt, was mit Männern wie dir passiert?
Wie mir. Und was ist mit dir? Eine Lüge wird also zur Wahrheit. Man muss nur lang genug daran glauben.
Du weißt gar nichts über mich.
Du wirst es niemandem erzählen. Ich habe versucht, so sehr dich zu vergessen. Aber ich kann's nicht.
Wie gesagt, basierend auf einer wahren Begebenheit. Und wir werden jetzt ganz tief reingehen in das Thema, in diesen Film. Denn nun, ohne große Umschweife, begrüße ich zu diesem Logenplatz-Spezial voller Stolz den Regisseur von Firebird, Peter Reban. Was that okay?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. I'll get there. Peter Reban. Und den Hauptdarsteller, Tom Pryor.
That's correct.
Tom Pryor Tom and Peter, herzlich willkommen. Welcome to Logenplatz, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks. Und ich sollte vielleicht dazu sagen, die Typen sind tatsächlich extra hier. Ne? Wir haben keine Kosten und Mühen gescheut, wir haben sie extra einfliegen lassen. Mehr oder weniger. I just told that we, you know, spared no expense. Is that the word? Is that how we say it? We just flew you in.
Okay.
From another district. By chopper, you got helicoptered in. Ja, wie ihr merkt, wir werden dieses Interview auf Englisch führen und vielleicht werde ich zwischendurch mal so ein bisschen übersetzen, mal gucken, wie das läuft, aber ich gehe einfach davon aus, dass euer Englisch immer besser geworden ist in den letzten 2,5 Jahren hier bei diesem Podcast. Guys, when you see the movie now, can you by now watch it relaxed? Just take it in, so to say? When you see it with an audience maybe? Or are there still so many thoughts surrounding it, making it, you know, is that all in your head or can you just, you know, sit back and just go like, oh, there, here we go again. Peter, maybe you start.
Oh, I had to take 2 glasses of Prosecco yesterday to watch it with an audience. I think I've seen it 200-300 times now and it's it's amazing how you start seeing things which you never see in the first couple of times, and when you're like so deep in. But it's actually amazing. It still touches me. Like there are still times when it gets a tear out of me, which I'm really surprised.
Mm.
And it changes. Like sometimes I watch it and it's one moment that another time another moment comes out. So it's cool.
Also tatsächlich auch, wenn man den Film schon 200, 300 Mal gesehen hat, dass ab und zu da nochmal Szenen kommen, die einen so ein bisschen dann doch kriegen und man vielleicht dann doch eine Träne vergießt. Also als kleine Übersetzung. Tom, what do you say? You cringe? Is that still happening? Because I mean, you've done a lot. I mean, you've done a lot. You're on the map, so to say. But do you still, you know, can you watch yourself? Is that something?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's so important for me personally to watch back and to learn and to see also what I'm capable of doing. But with this particular film, I am kind of through with watching myself because, again, like I've been like the co-writer with Peter previous, like we shot the movie, and then I've basically been all the way through the post-production, like and the editing and the scoring and so many iterations of the film that I just go like I can't look at my face anymore.
It's nicht mehr aus. Nein. No. No. No.
I mean, yesterday, for example, like we began and I was kind of like sit through just to make sure everything, you know, the film isn't blown up or the sound's not awful or something. And then I just go outside and get drunk or something. So just to kind of
good on you. Good on you. Okay, but who wants to take this question? Or maybe both of you. How have you heard about this story? Where did it come from? I mean, we see the finished product, but where did it come from? How did it come to you?
I can start and then hand over to Tom.
Yeah.
Actually, it's interesting, but this story found me thanks to Berlin, thanks to Berlinale, the Sergei, a film critic who plays the drama professor in the film as well. He was showing around the story, and a friend who established the Black Knights Film Festival, Tina, she read it and thought, wow, like, that would be something for me. So I read it in my quite broken Russian over a weekend, and I was just very moved. I was literally cried at home and felt that I have to make this into a film, and started researching because it felt so almost unbelievable that how could such a relationship have existed in the Soviet Air Force at the height of the Cold War in the 70s. And hadn't written anything. So when I thought that the masterpiece was ready, then a mutual friend introduced me to Tom, a film financier from Los Angeles. And Tom had just finished shooting Kingsman, the first one. And we shot two scenes, mostly to demonstrate my ability to direct, not Tom's ability to act, clearly. And then Tom started to make some comments.
Like a proof of concept. You did something like that. Okay. One moment. Das muss ich ganz kurz übersetzen, denn tatsächlich hat Peter das Drehbuch gelesen. Das war in Russisch geschrieben. Und das zeigt die Kraft dieser Geschichte, dieser Story. Dass selbst wenn man das in seinem gebrochenen Russisch liest, dass er das so packen kann und er unbedingt diesen Film machen wollte. I just said that, you know, even like you said with your broken Russian, the power of that script, that story, that, you know, grabbed you. And the same happened to Tom.
Well,
I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, the introduction to Peter came, as Peter said, through the film producer. And I read Peter's first draft of the script and was really moved by it. And also, like, I love Cold War era Soviet Union. I've always been fascinated by. I've grown up reading Tintin and James Bond, watching James Bond and Jason Bourne. And I've always loved this kind of thriller element. And so I was like, like maybe we can put that into the story a bit. But we decided to shoot the two teaser scenes, and I started making some suggestions on how the dialogues could be a little bit improved in those scenes, which Peter Dave graciously took the feedback. And then that really led to a couple of weeks worth of discussion afterwards about how the overall structure can be improved in the story. And then that led to 2.5 years of rewriting the whole story. So, which we did together. And I think it would have been a very different film had I not been involved. And, you know, we've had a sort of tug of war, really, with regards to kind of taking it more in the kind of thriller direction, more in the romantic love story direction. Mm. And I think we've kind of come to a nice, like, a synergy through that writing process, really.
I was, like, pulling to the more, like, slow, melancholic side, right?
Oh, that was you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Peter wollte es ein bisschen melancholischer machen, Tom wollte ein bisschen mehr kalter Krieg-Thriller. Okay, yeah, good.
We really should compare, actually, the scripts. I've been wanting to do this for a while, about what it was like before I came in. It would have been a very different story. I mean, I really wanted, like, part of my job as the conjoining screenwriter was to bring it into the accessibility to the story, because Peter, you know, has grown up in the Soviet Union and all the intricacies of that time. But, like, to a Western outsider audience, if you haven't grown up in that environment, for example, there were so many nuances which had to be kind of freed up. Mm. And then also explanation around how this was even possible, this relationship. Because when you read the original story by Sergei, there is kind of this sense of going, how is this even possible? How could it have happened? And so we had to put in the sociological, political context and then really kind of, like, flesh it out with the truth. And that's what we did when we actually went to meet Sergei in Moscow. Yeah. We interviewed him over several days, got to know him, and which was invaluable as a writer and as an actor. Mm. And, that really meant that we could get a really much more accessible version of this story to make it bigger and to wider audiences. Mm.
Das war auf jeden Fall wichtig, dass Thriller und Liebesfilmelemente halt da gegeneinander miteinander ausbalanciert werden. Das war ein wichtiger Aspekt für jeweils die beiden Herren hier. Dann hat er aber jetzt schon gesagt, dass sie eben den echten Sergei, auf dem diese Geschichte basiert, getroffen haben. Und das hat natürlich geholfen. Sie haben ihn mehrere Tage interviewt. And I wanted to ask, when you met Sergei, can be seen or considered a simple question, but I'm really looking forward to the answer. Was he a happy man when you met him?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Surprisingly. I think it's such an inspiration. It was such an inspiration to meet him, because knowing what he went through, there was no bitterness. There was open love. Mm. Towards everyone, and
that was what I was wondering. How was he more melancholic, or, you know, was he straight happy that, you know, he's there where he was back then when you met him?
Yeah, it was actually honestly like,
sorry, I interrupted you. I'm still doing it.
I'm just going to do it as well.
We'll get back to it in a minute. Go for it.
It was honestly really amazing to meet somebody who has lived and lost in such a way, who always sort of seemed to see the bright and sunny side of things. And that's actually really one of the main reasons why I decided to make certain character decisions as the actor. Mm-hmm. When playing him, we decided to not make the film, for example, about shame, which so often features in same-sex relationship films, because he didn't seem, like, from my perception anyway, like a shameful man. Like, he was, you know, unfortunate to have grown up and be in the environment where he was, but...
And here I'm interrupting you, because that's what I was thinking when I saw it yesterday, that I'm loving the fact that the movie, you know, we have to, you know, watch for spoilers, I don't know, but I love the feeling of the film that this is not about, like, oh my God, why am I doing this? Why am I feeling this way? Am I an animal? It was more about the system that they had to fight, and that the love, you know, was growing in there. And I love that about the movie, because, like you said, so many times these kind of movies show that from the X-Men perspective. You know, I'm different, and you know, so I'm just, that wasn't really a question. I just interrupted you to tell you that I concur.
Okay, good.
Okay. There you go.
No, I mean, it was a very deliberate choice. Again, like, one of the things that I kind of insisted on stripping out of the original version was the sulking.
Yeah.
or like the kind of being, you know, the wallowing in the version of it. And I was just like going, we kind of don't really need to see this, because so many films have done that before around this particular subject matter. So, you know, Sergei's journey more is about being unlocked as a person. Like, he's kind of not really dreaming very big. He's quite restrained and quite kind of, like, sort of, like, small in terms of scope of his life at the beginning of the film. And there's this sort of unspoken about potential that may happen with Louisa, but we don't really ever go there. It's kind of like left in this place again. They've been mm-hmm. friends for a long time. But then really when Ramon comes onto the base, he's the catalyst to so many things for Sergei to follow his heart in what he wants to do with his life. Mm. With his aspirations, Ramon is part of like the unlocking of the childhood trauma and the realization around that, and also really the main aspect of it, which is actually the love story and what it is really to follow your heart pretty much at all costs. And he never really gives up. Like, that's actually the one thing that is kind of consistent, is no matter how much his heart has continued to be broken, the all is lost moment, really, or just around over halfway of the film, when it's like, well, that's it. He's still going for it.
Mm. Have you been able to ask him? Because I was wondering as well, was it the love that kept him going, or was there something else? Maybe. I mean, like, determination to get where he wanted to go. So the love is a big part of it, of course, but...
I actually have a feeling that he was not so much motivated by achievement, because when he graduated, you know, actually from the drama school and later in life, he got a lot of offers to work in different Russian theaters. Mm-hmm. And instead, he went home to nurse his dying mother for 5 years and took on a job as a night mailman in real life. And only years later was he discovered by a director and invited back to the theater world and performed in, I think, 46 roles in Soviet and Russian cinema. So it's looking at his real life story, I think he was very much, very much just doing things from his heart.
Mm. Yeah. I learned that Sergei died before the movie was finished, but has he seen rushes? Has he seen dailies? Has he seen anything?
Nope.
Okay, what do you think he would have thought about the movie? That's a stupid question, really, but it's just... But you know what I mean. It's like, what do you think?
Well, it's a pretty tough to guess that, but I trust we did our best. We really gave our best to tell his story, and...
I think that the question is more in the direction of, you met him, and maybe if he would have been alive at the premiere, what do you think he would have said afterwards? Like, yeah, but the costumes, guys, come on.
I think he would have flirted with Oleg.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think that actually, I mean, you know, the nearest point of feedback we've managed to get is his best friend. Mm. The other Sergei, as we call him, because they were both Sergei, and you know, he brought the original story to Peter, and I think that he has been very complimentary of the film, almost to a degree where he's just like, well, you know, this is a very, not like a glorified version of it, but he was very happy with the adaptation that we made, and kind of was I think he was very, very grateful for what it was. I think, you know, when you read the original story, if you read the original story and then you actually compare it to what we created as a film, they're actually two quite different animals.
Yeah. But it is a movie after all. You know, you could have made a documentary about it. That's, you know, a totally different beast. And the movie looks fantastic. It looks like $100 million. There are some shots in there where it's like, wow, okay, who did they bribe to get that shot done? Get shot done. But you know what I mean? The production value, the things you see on screen, this doesn't look like a first feature. This looks like, you know, someone who has, you know, a clear vision of a... I don't want to use the word Hollywood, but it looks in the best way, and I mean in the most positive way, it looks Hollywood. You know, it looks like a big thing. And then you have this intimate story in there that you got in there, actually. With all that has happened throughout the last couple of decades, I should say, which feeling is bigger? A lot has been accomplished, or there's still so much left to do? That feeling. Which one, to you guys personally, what do you think, which feeling is bigger?
Do you mean that specifically? Or?
For the movement LGBTQ+.
I mean, there's been...
What do you feel like You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, I think there's been great strides that have been made in certain places in the world, and then there's other places where actually it's almost like doing a backwards turn, which is kind of crazy. I mean, what happened in Hungary recently with the law, actually, which is not dissimilar, actually, to the Russian law, which is basically banning promotion of homosexuality to people under 18, is to deprive, you know, all of those youth of a reality, which is just to be free and love who you love. But I think that it's kind of interesting. Like, I mean, you take like America and Germany and the UK and so many different countries where there is such liberty now that you can't have a country almost as like leading by example now. It has to come through people demanding that of just like the right. I think that the more we can show this as a more and more commonality, a common practice, a common way of being. It's like every time you demonstrate the behavior of change, it becomes more and more apparent within that society. And it's just really a case of like, I think people having to be very courageous in their environments and just go like, we will push on.
Peter, how do you see that?
I think it's like the whole system is messed up. Like there needs to be a new political system in the world. I think the whole overall society, like the way of this democracy in quotation marks as it is today, doesn't work. That politicians before the elections make a lot of promises and then the day after make deals and forget it all. It's become very inhumane, I think, the system. So I didn't actually vote the last elections because I just couldn't find anybody to give my vote to. And that's I think my feeling that worldwide, really, you know, looking at Poland, looking at Hungary, looking at Russia, looking at the US, I mean, it's just like huge change is needed. That's my feeling, like a radical change.
With me, it's sometimes that I'm thinking when I see, like, this may sound stupid, but I will have a point. Is that when you have like streaming services like Netflix or just, you know, Prime Video or something, where you have like this drawer that says gay films, and I'm thinking like, is that the right way to go? Because, I mean, if the movie is about that theme, if you want to tell, you know, a story where you ask questions and directly related to that, but movies like Firebird, I'm guessing will end up, you know, so to say, in that column. You know, it says gay movies, and I'm thinking, this is stupid, you know, because, you know, if you don't want to talk about these things in that way and that way and this way. I have this example, which I love. My question in my head is this still a thing? Do you still have to label it, that movies like this, that way? Because in the series, and here we go, The Dark Crystal, you know, Age of Resistance, there is a gay couple in there. Like puppets, you know, there's this one character that just talks about my two dads, and that's it. There's no, like 20 years ago, there would have been like a character just coming in, just go like, because, you know, in this Gelfling race, we sometimes have two men raising Gelfling kids, you know. But, you know, this is Hansen, Jim Hansen. You're like one of the pioneers of stuff like that, you know, like, and you just had a character that says, yeah, my two dads, and that was it. And I was thinking, yeah, that's the way to go.
Totally.
That's the way to go, because you don't have to turn it into a thing. And on the other hand, you have to still turn it into a thing and just tell people, stop turning it into a thing. And with that, you're turning it into a thing. Am I making sense?
Yeah, I think it's a question of almost what's going on in the film industry at the moment. And I've been asked at many festivals that, do you cast, you know, gay actors for gay roles? And I'm like, no, like I want to cast the best actors for the best roles, that I am not concerned about their sexuality. But I think at the same time, it's almost like a necessary process to change the existing system, which was very discriminatory against everybody. So it's interesting, exactly, that you need change, but at the same time, you just need everybody to kind of live and let others live.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get back to the production of this film. To you both, do you remember a certain moment during production or maybe in pre-production where it clicked, it all clicked, where you knew you had your character, where Peter knew, I know where I'm going with this? Do you remember a certain moment where you knew, you just knew, oh, this is working, I got this? You're still waiting for that moment.
I mean, my kind of perception of that would be that I had a moment just before we started shooting, a huge amount of critical self-doubt, just going like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, play the lead in a film, have this responsibility of playing somebody who existed in real life and, you know, have the responsibility of leaving their representation, their legacy. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like this sort of dark night of the soul, which was not particularly fun, very kind of like dark and depressive place. And then I kind of really started to sort of undig myself from there and actually, you know, basically take it by the horns and just go like, well, either it's checking out or it's checking in and going all in. And so I just decided to go all in. And that was actually an amazing moment, actually, where I could, to a degree anyway, drop the writing and drop the producing and just solely focus upon the performance. Of course, like, through that process, we had endless discussions about what we had to change in the writing on set and at last minute and firefighting. But once the momentum of like all energies went into the performance, into the accent, into the intricacies and the kind of playfulness of the performance, that's when it started to flow. But then came post-production, and then I honestly had no idea whether what we had made was actually any good or not. We sat endlessly through the first assembly screenings and with quite a few of the creative team and exterior team in it. And as an actor, that was honestly one of the hardest things that I've actually done, is watching back performances and you come out of the cinema and nobody says anything about, particularly about you as a performer, because it's like, oh, you know, there's a problem with this. This doesn't work in this order, la, 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 la. And it went on for months and months and months. And I was just like, wow, maybe I'm just really... And then, you know, seeing
spoiler alert, you're not.
But, you know, then seeing like what we've got to now, I just feel like it's something that I'm very proud of. But it was kind of interesting to get into that flow of the performance and then like really experience this huge amount of like literally criticism, not only like towards, not necessarily towards me, but towards the film and how it was going to be like, there were so many problems to actually sort out in the edit. A few things that we'd overlooked as writers, and we were like, oh yeah, it'll just sort itself out, and it didn't. So we had to then kind of double up on our efforts and literally start rewriting slightly in the edit.
Yeah. I'm going to set the question up again, because I wanted to tell people that Peter hat vorher, das ist sein erster Film, ne, sein erster richtiger Spielfilm. Er hat vorher zum Beispiel Robbie Williams live in Tallinn gemacht und daran gearbeitet, beziehungsweise Regie geführt und so, und Musikvideos und so weiter gedreht. Und das ist der erste Feature-Film. So you have worked before this movie. You have done a lot. You know, I mean, music videos. You've worked on Robbie Williams live in Tallinn. You know, stuff like that. But this is your first feature. Like, let's call it a normal movie. So, do you remember your click moment when you thought like, yeah, I got this?
I don't think it has clicked yet. I think there's so much to learn, honestly. That's a really good question.
I mean, maybe there must have been moments where maybe you've been overwhelmed, like when Tom said, you know, with the script maybe and stuff like that, and you, because I don't know how cocky you are, but you know, if I would direct my first feature film, I'd be like, oh, is this what I should do in life? And then maybe that's just me, you know, having a moment where thinking like, yeah, I got this. I'm not looking for weakness. You know, I'm not looking for weakness. I'm looking for like the positive side of that. You know, so when you see Tom working on set for the first time or something, and you just look at him, just go like, "Yeah, he's gorgeous. This is gonna work." I'm trying to get an answer out of you. You get that?
Well, it's been such a long process. I mean, I don't even remember when I did something else than this film. And okay. I think I actually like literally burnt out because after the shoot, I went immediately with our editor into a dark basement for about 3-4 months. And I think that was probably...
And what happened to the movie during that time?
It got better and then it got worse, I think. But it's so interesting because the time on the set seems like the most fun and also the smallest time. It's, you know, 3 months out of the last 3 years. So so that's, I think if I could be more on the set and that would be amazing. That's what I love to do is actually in that moment observing and figuring out where the truth lies, like what moments are real and whether we have gotten to a point of emotional honesty. And, and I think that's where I feel most at home.
Look, it's a fantastic movie. It's very well directed and crafted. And yeah, the acting is okay.
We got that.
But, you know, I was just thinking, you know, because I love to ask that question, you know, about the click moment. How much room for improv was there with a story like that? Did it happen at all? Or, because you were, you know, fiddling with the script so you know, for 2.5 years.
Yeah, I mean, getting so kind of intimate with the script, but then also it's kind of a bit like sort of having a really good plan and then kind of throwing it away if necessary. Mm. Not that we kind of abandoned really like the kind of skeleton structure, but what actually was one of the hardest things to do actually as the screenwriters was to figure out the dialogue between the two guys, particularly because you're talking about a language which doesn't exist, like the number of words around these particular subject matters didn't exist at the time. Mm-hmm. Today, there's all the terms of, you know, what you're into or who you are or, you know, what pronouns you have or kind of all those different sort of factors. Mm-hmm. But at the time, the reality was that it's like, how do you begin to even scale this type of a relationship? How do you even begin to engage in one? Mm-hmm. So actually, the work that we did together with Oleg was kind of invaluable in the process of literally like the physical interaction. And I'm not just talking about like intimate scenes. I'm talking about this is really how the body language was, how we were in a room together. How do you show that distance, but curiosity and forbidden curiosity? And it comes in this subtlety of like a tiny steeled glance, knowing that actually this could be interpreted the wrong way and you're packing your bags and going off to a hard labor camp for 5 years. And the reality of that was that you're not coming back. Mm-hmm. So there was to a degree, a improvisation of sorts, which kind of came really through, mainly through the physical action, like the actual dialogue we had to keep as specific as possible. And particularly because Oleg, whose first language isn't English, we had to be kind of quite mindful of his process as well to allow him the time to properly prepare so we couldn't go, by the way, we've rewritten the whole scene and here you go. Because I think, honestly, for me as an actor and that in my own native language and somebody goes, okay, you got to learn this in like 10 minutes. I'm just like, it's so unfair to be able to master the lines and the feeling and the performance.
Mm. I know, you know, international release and everything. I get that. I understand that absolutely. But were there ever a moment where you thought we're shooting it in Russian? Was that ever there? Yeah.
Well, it was a tough decision because obviously shooting in Russian would have been the most authentic feeling. And, you know, a couple of film festivals said, oh, we love your story, but we can't, like, take you because you're shot in English. But we wanted the film to be really accessible and we wanted it to find the audience worldwide. And, you know, if you look at foreign language films in the UK or US, it's less than 1% of cinema goers. And looking at the amount of festivals that we've been to, and, you know, we've been opening 19 Chicago, Atlanta, San Diego, Florida, I think 6 or 7 festivals now. I don't think they would have programmed us if we were shooting in Russian. And secondly, which we found out later, but kind of had suspicions, we would have been limited to casting only in Russia. And when we offered supporting roles to like really amazing Russian actors, all of them declined. Said that I love your story, but I can't risk my career.
Wow.
So I think, yeah, it was definitely the right choice to go.
Okay. the movie is called Firebird, and the people will find out why when they watch the movie. And why is Firebird in there? Is that in the original story? Is that something that, you know, they went to see on stage? Or why? I guess my question is why is it? I mean, I know why, what the Firebird represents. Für alle unsere Klassikhörer. Der Film heißt Feuervogel, weil das mit Igor Strawinskys Feuervogel zu tun hat, natürlich. Aber ich möchte schon wissen, warum. Ich habe nicht viel übersetzt, fällt mir gerade auf. But why? Why Igor Stravinsky's Firebird? Who's the fan of Igor? Of you guys?
We thought it was such a prevalent example of what happens in the film. Interestingly enough, actually, the film was originally, well, the book is actually originally called A Tale About Roman. And then the title of the screenplay when I came to it actually was called Roman. And then in most people reading the title page of the script read it as Roman. And then it's like, oh, so we're doing something set in classical Roman times. And it got very confusing. So okay. One of the main reasons actually why we renamed it was actually because of the relevance to the theme really of rebirth, which happens in the film. And, you know, Firebird is kind of linked with like flying jets, but at the same time, it's also linked with like death and rebirth, which happens multiple times in the story, both sort of metaphysically, but also through Sergei's experience. And, you know, you could argue that Roman is Sergei's Firebird in the sense that he kind of unlocks him and releases him and lets him kind of come into his sort of like fullness of who he is. So there's so many different factors where it kind of like felt relevant for the title, but the choice really behind choosing that particular piece of you know, ballet and music was that it felt like it carried the same qualities. It's a very activating, overwhelming, intense, bright, colorful piece of performance. And you know, I think that Peter did like an amazing job of actually bringing that to life on stage to the point where you could just film the whole thing because it looked so good. But yeah, that was really like the kind of tying in factor to the story, to the name.
Okay. It's a fantastic film. It's a wonderful love story. My last question is on a scale of 1 to 10 question. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most optimistic, how do you see the future of mankind?
9.
That's pretty damn optimistic. Okay.
Yep.
Peter?
10.
Wow. Okay. It's good. Yeah, I'm asking for numbers and...
I'm saying 9 only because if we said 10, then we'd think we're already there. I think it's a little bit of work to do.
Yeah, it's a little bit of work to do. Yeah, absolutely. You're sticking with 10.
Oh, yeah. That was the first number that came to mind. I think because it's all a game and, you know, it's like we're all here performing on a stage, as Shakespeare said. So the key is just not to take the performance too seriously.
Yeah, okay. That's wonderful, optimistic answers. I think we've fucked a problem. Like, big time. Kidding aside, it's a fantastic film, Firebird. Thank you guys very, very much. We're at an end. This is it. Absolute pleasure and an honor. Thank you guys very much. Dankeschön.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Peter and Tom, thank you very much. In unserem Logenplatz Spezial zu Firebird. Unbedingt reingehen. Das war's von unserer Seite. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Ich muss los.
Logenplatz, eine Produktion der Podcast 1 GmbH.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code MOM.